Doug Carr, Scott Anderson, 97.1 The Ticket. Open lines, 248-539-9797. Thanks for being with us on a Monday. Champ and Chump, get your votes in. We go to James. You're next on 97.1 The Ticket. Hello, James.
Happy Monday, guys.
What's up?
Champ, Kang is a Nostradamus. That's freaking unbelievable. Cracking Brad is ridiculous. Yeah. Freaking ridiculous. Yep. I need lottery numbers. What I can't understand is how Carl Anthony Towns picked up his fourth foul with 10:31 left in the third quarter, and they didn't go after him. I was blown away. I went back to on ESPN's website to look at the play-by-play. He didn't come out of the game until, I think, the fourth minute of the third quarter. So he stayed in an extra six and something minutes after picking up his fourth. I was blown away. Yeah. Blown away. Because, as you're saying, he's hitting these ridiculous shots over the backboard, thinking he's Steph Curry all of a sudden. And that could have been negated way early on. So I was blown away how they didn't call ISOs or what to go right after him to pick up his fifth foul and get him out of the game.
They went after him a couple times, but they didn't go after him like every single possession. Could they have made more of an effort to foul him out? I suppose they could have. Watching him play defense after that, and it's part of the reason why I think the Pistons were able to come back, is he just had to be a swinging gate. He matadored a whole bunch of guys going to the basket. He would jump straight up, but kind of fade away. When they did go at him, he kind of let. I think it was a big part of their comeback was his inability to defend in the paint. And yeah, could they have done it more? They probably could have. Thought they did a few times.
I would have appreciated more of an aggression going right at him.
Yeah.
That's all I thought.
James, you might be right. I mean, they might sit down and watch the film of that game, and JB might say, we blew that opportunity to get him out of the game. 248-539-9797. And by the way, you just have to take your hat off to him. The shots that he made, that ugly push set shot is money. And then the fadeaway with Durant in his face, fading out of bounds in the corner was insane. Like when the Pistons are like a stop away from really having the game.
Yeah.
Carl Anthony Towns came up big.
He came up big. Brunson came up big, knocking down 3-point shots. And the last few minutes of the game, the Knicks came up with those massive shots. The Pistons had a couple, but they couldn't match all of them. And in the end, it's a 1-point game, and the Knicks were able to close it out because of a missed call at the end of the game.
It sucked.
That catch fadeaway from the baseline, Doug?
Yeah.
He was like behind the backboard.
I know.
It was unreal.
Yeah.
What a shot. There's like
it's a great shot.
You just tip your hat to that. That's amazing.
And then I don't want to, but it's a very reluctant hat tip.
But then it got to the point, though, where to me it's like, if Cat is about to shoot, it's going in. You have to get in his face. And this is where, you know, when Tobias gets in foul trouble or not having Stu out there, you know, you got to have big men that can defend Cat because he can take you out no matter where.
248-539-9797. Chuck, you're next on 97.1 The Ticket. Hello, Chuck.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hey, my champ is Spencer Torkelson. I think he's having a great year. He's had a great comeback year. It's great validation for him. And my chump is J.B. Bickerstaff for letting Cunningham talk him into calling that challenge in the first half. So if he'd had that at the end, we win the game. If he'd had that challenge at the end of the game. So
well, they weren't able to challenge that call. Because if it was called a foul, they could challenge it. But because it wasn't called a foul, they can't challenge it.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure of that. If there's no call on it, they can't challenge that.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but it is what it is. And they could have used it at other times, though. He probably could afford to be more judicious with his use of those.
That was stupid. You know, you shouldn't even be calling him in the first half. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate the phone call. 248-539-9797. Victor in Northville, you're next on 97.1 The Ticket. Hi, Victor.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How are you doing, sir?
I'm not trying to defend the referee too much, but if you look at his angle and where he was standing kind of on the left, behind and kind of on the left-hand side of Hardaway on that shot, I think he was kind of focused more on where the defender was landing. And he landed on the side of him, but he hip-checked him, obviously. And I don't think he actually saw that. And also, he was watching his hands, too. But I don't know. He should have still looked at the whole thing and saw that Hardaway moved.
Victor, I'd say this. If you're gonna try to defend him because of his positioning, I don't think there's a defense. He's right there. He's 7 feet away from the play, and he doesn't make the call.
Time, though. I know it sounds like I am.
No, it's okay.
Watch his angle on that.
If he was
his angle on me,
if he had a bad angle on it, was his fault? Like, we asked, why did that happen? Okay, is the reason that it happened because he was out of position?
I think he was out of position a little bit. I don't think he was focusing so much on the guy's hip thing. It was more like where the defender was landing, and the defender landed on the side of him, but he caught his hip. And also, he was watching his hands, and he couldn't quite. I didn't see the hip check honestly till I saw the replay. I didn't see the hip check. I mean, I'm not as close as the ref, obviously, but I didn't see it. And I saw. I said, "There it is. There's the foul." I kind of saw that. I mean, screw the ref, you know. He cost us the whole season, you know. He cost us the whole season.
I hope not. I hope they come out and with a renewed determination. And every time stuff like this happens, I'm hoping they're learning something. I hope that they're getting more comfortable with the stage and the intensity of these games, so they become second nature. Unless, like, it's our first time through, and by our, I mean the Pistons. It's the Pistons' first time through a postseason. And if it's a learning experience, there'll be that at least that's accomplished. You know, this feels like a series that they could win. At least it felt like it. The hard part now is trying to find a way to, I mean, you just got to win the next game.
They have to win the next game. Got to win the next game. Get it back to Detroit and see if you can win another game. And it's a very uphill battle. It's very steep.
Yep.
To stave off elimination.
And now, look, there's a lot that went wrong in that game that needs to get addressed. They have got to do a better job defending Karl-Anthony Towns. And I go back to that regular season game that they played near the end of the year against the Knicks, and how frustrated Karl-Anthony Towns got with Isaiah Stewart. And damn it, the Isaiah Stewart injury, you know, it is what it is. It's hard for them to overcome. And he's a player that I think would be drawing a lot of defensive minutes against Karl-Anthony Towns. A lot of defensive minutes.
Yeah, this is it's unfortunate that Isaiah Stewart's not available. It's been a full week since that. The knee injury is obviously more severe than anybody thought.
Yeah, unlike Brunson, he's actually hurt, Gator.
Yeah. Yes. He actually does have a knee injury. When he grabbed his knee, it's because he's got a knee injury.
Yep.
Not because he was embarrassed that he lost the ball in a critical situation.
Or maybe he just, you know what? Do you think the Knicks have magic sponge and can of spray?
If you're asking me if I think that Jalen Brunson has soccer player tendencies, the answer is yes.
Okay, there you go. 248-539-9797. Champ and Chump, get your votes in. We will talk more about the NFL draft today at 11:30, but Piston fans venting on this Monday here on 97.1 The Ticket.
Got problems with your garage door? Is it sluggish like a wet sponge? Is it just not operating the way you want it to? Call the great folks over at Precision Garage Door Service, because they will repair your garage doors. They'll come out at the time that works for you, because you can just go right to their webpage at precisiondoormi.com and schedule an appointment that works for your schedule. You're not beholden to their schedule. This is what's great about Precision. They're willing to work with you. In fact, they're open on weekends at no extra cost. All calls are answered 24/7. You want to actually call them at 1-800-DOOR-REPAIR. That works too. And if you need new garage doors, you got it. Precision Garage Door Service is the place to call for new garage doors, because they've got a warehouse chock full of them, all different styles. I know this firsthand because I had to get new garage doors for my house. They came out, walked me through the entire process, went through a bunch of options, and now I am absolutely thrilled with the garage doors that I have. Give them a call today, 1-800-DOOR-REPAIR, or go to precisiondoormi.com and schedule that appointment.
All right, a lot of feedback coming in today. And look, I like to compartmentalize topics, and I do think it is absolutely a big story what the Pistons didn't achieve for the first you know, 47 minutes and 57 seconds. But what happened in the last couple of seconds is a topic in and of itself. And it was a terrible missed call. The league admitted it, and it sucks because, you know, in the end, Tim Hardaway on the free throw line with tenths of a second left, shooting three, needing one, hoping to get two, is a great place to be at. But they didn't make that call. Okay, so, you know, the Pistons aren't supposed to blow the Knicks out. The fact that the game's close at the end is them doing their job to give themselves a chance to win. They got to close out games, though, when they have big leads. They can't afford to have offensive droughts like they had in the second quarter. They got to have better answers for Karl-Anthony Towns and Jalen Brunson. I don't know if they have an answer for Brunson. I feel like they can do a better job on Cat. And I don't know if you saw the one time he complained after he missed a shot. Oh, I'm sorry. Was that every shot he misses, he complains?
No. I mean, that's the NBA, right?
I know, every player
will do that.
I know.
But, yeah, look.
I'm bitter today. So at this period of time, he's the worst.
Yeah, we're all bitter today. And looking in the mirror, I mean, the Pistons, obviously, they can blame themselves first and foremost. What happened at the end of the game, that's on the refs, and that's a mistake. And it cost the Pistons the game. But so did the way that they played. You know, as we said from moment one of the show today, two separate issues. They're both true.
Yep.
They are both 100% true. The Pistons shot themselves in the foot time and time again, and the referees cost them on the last play of the game. But where do they shoot themselves in the foot? They were careless with the basketball throughout the game, but more so in the first half. They had too many empty possessions in the fourth quarter. And guys you're depending on to step up and knock down shots are not knocking down shots. Malik Beasley, where the hell are you? All right, I know he knocked down a couple threes last night, but by and large in that game, not good.
Yeah, he knocked those down, Gator, what was he? Like for the series, 3 for 19 or something? Yeah. Like it's been terrible.
And even so, he was 3 for 9 in the game. It's 33%, which is 7%. I mean, he's a 40% shooter from 3-point land, and he's just hasn't been good. 5 of 12 in the game is not good enough. You need this guy to be a big-time performer because right now they don't have that secondary scorer that they desperately need. There's Cade Cunningham, and then there's who knows who's going to step up. You know, you need to count on Jalen Duren for a double-double every night. 17 rebounds, great. 6 points, not so much. And he was minus 17 on the court, by far the worst in the game. But Malik Beasley is a guy you've been counting on to score 15, 18, 20 points, can even go for 30 if he gets hot. Don't let him get hot. Well, he hasn't yet. But that's still in the toolbox. Let's go.
Yep.
We need you, big fella. Get hot.
The struggles yesterday of Asar Thompson and Malik Beasley early. He got hot later in the game, but and the turnovers by Cade, they just have to. I mean, it's been a problem all season long, yeah. and it reared its ugly head and it cost him.
As a team, they went 7 for 29 from three. That's 24%.
Well, at one point they were had a.
I think they missed the first 10.
Yeah, they were brutal from three for much of the game, and one for their first 14. And what'd they finish?
7 of 29.
7 of 29. So, you know, they got better.
6 for 15 afterwards. Yeah.
You know, the three big things that I was worried about heading into the series was, you know, turnovers, secondary scoring outside of Cade, and inexperience. And I feel like all three have reared their ugly heads during this series. And we all were asked to pick an X-Factor player, right? My X-Factor player was Asar Thompson. I've been really disappointed in him, but I think he's so green and so young right now. He depends so much on the athleticism, but Jalen Brunson's working him. And I think Asar's got to go back to some fundamentals as, you know, getting down in his defensive stance, you know, anticipating more, because I think Brunson's going to get his no matter what. I think you're right, Doug. But you got to make it at least tougher on him. He's got to work for it. And I think Asar has got that type of defensive capabilities. It's just not showing. He's playing like 20 minutes a game.
Feedback coming in. You can't say the Pistons got robbed. Cade had a great look. He just missed it. And the turnovers did us in. You can't win a playoff game that way.
Yeah, okay, you can.
You can't say they got robbed. They got robbed. We have a fundamental disagreement, whoever sent this in. Yeah, Cade had a great look and missed it. That's true. Turnovers did him in. They hurt.
That's true.
It's hard to win a playoff game that way. Agree. And they get robbed.
It's all true.
I mean, it's all true. It's all true. You can totally say. Now, you can. Here's where I would say you can't say that the only singular reason they lost the game is because they missed the foul. They missed the foul call. You can't say that, and I won't say that. It wasn't the singular reason they lost the game. But it was a big reason why they didn't have a great chance to win the game. And all the rest of that stuff is also true. Play never happens if Cade makes that shot. Look, they might have a bigger lead if they don't turn it over. But they're not supposed to blow the Knicks out. Their job is to play, to give themselves a chance to win late in every game. If they're an overwhelming favorite, I might play a little bit more heavy on the Pistons blowing it. But they're not an overwhelming favorite. They're the underdog in this series whose job is to give themselves a chance to win the game. And when you have a chance to win the game, and that chance, you're denied that chance, it's frustrating.
I get that nobody wants to talk about that because they'll think it's a loser mentality to blame it on the mm-hmm. officials.
Yeah, I think if they dwell on it, I agree. Yeah. It's not their. It's our job, though. It's not our job to not dwell on it. It's their job to not dwell on it.
It also cost them a chance to win the game.
Yeah,
can't deny that. And the other stuff is true, too. It's all true.
Feedback. JB got out coach. There's no way Asar should only play 22 minutes if he's not in foul trouble. He is our best defender. Put him in the effing game. SMH. I understand. I just thought he was struggling mightily on the offensive end.
We had four turnovers in the 22 minutes, which is not good. So, but the simple answer to that is you don't put the ball in his hands, I guess. Yeah. If you just want him out there to defend, then have him out there to defend. But then it becomes one-dimensional. Unless you use him like Duren and just he's there for the flush, right? And he's obviously incredibly athletic. I think he's got such a bright future ahead of him. But he's there for his defensive prowess, and he needs to exert that more.
Tony and Warren says, Doug, why are you surprised? The officiating in the NBA is by far the worst of all the four major sports. It's why I can't watch anymore. It's a very difficult game to officiate, and this series is insanely physical. It really is. Regardless of the BS call, I'd like to be the surgeon apologizing for operating on the wrong knee. Oops, sorry, all went good, but the damage is done. That's from Steve. To hell with the Pistons, I'm done with the NBA. I'd walked away from it. These young Pistons brought me back in, and the officials have ruined it. That's from an unnamed texter. NBA doesn't want the Pistons to win. Apologies are a joke. That's another unnamed texter.
Well, it's better than no apology. It's better than them coming out and saying, nope, everything was good.
Dave in Detroit says, call me crazy. I just expect this as a Detroit fan. To win, Detroit teams need to leave no doubt. They can't just leave it to a referee call. It'll never go our way. Pedro in Memphis says, champ, the Tigers, AJ Hinch. He keeps the train moving down the tracks. Chump Mel Kiper, it's time for Kang to take over his job. Kang is brilliant, but here's one thing to keep in mind, and he really is brilliant. Kang's expertise is not the draft. Kang's expertise is thinking how Brad Holmes thinks. I'm not taking credit away from you. You are doing, when people want to know what the Lions are going to do, you did an unbelievable job. You picked two of their first three picks, Tyleek Williams and Isaac Tesla. It's incredible.
Breaking Brad. It's what I've done.
Well done.
My champ is Kang, nailed his predictions with Williams and Tesla, plus his bold prediction, Sanders not getting drafted in the first round.
I said he was going to get drafted in the fifth round, guys.
No, he didn't do that.
No, I didn't. That part I didn't do.
You know who did? No one.
Yeah.
No one.
We will talk about that a little bit later on. My champ is the Tigers. They are a joy to watch. My champ is the Pistons. It's tough to watch all the bricks and turnovers. Yeah, I mean, look, They're not playing unopposed. They're playing a really good team that forces a lot of those things, and I want to give them credit. But they must cut back on the turnovers. Some of the turnovers look careless, and it's hard to win that way. And maybe it isn't close in the end if they don't turn it over.
You know what I would like to have seen, at least at the end of that game? I know that you can't review it and all that. I would have liked to have seen the officials get together and say, did anybody see anything here? What did you see? What did you see? What did you see? And just do a quick 10-second powwow, and then you could, you know, wave off.
I'm not sure you can do that. And it would have been more controversial if they did something they're not allowed to do. I'm not sure that you can get together and say, all right, did anybody see a foul? They will get together. One guy will overrule another one on an out-of-bounds call or something like that, but I don't know that I've ever seen any official. If nobody blew the whistle, I don't know. I mean, aren't they basically saying, none of us called a foul, let's all huddle up. Do one of us want to call foul now? And I don't know that you can do that. Would you have liked to see it? Yes, I'd like to see anything other than what we saw.
I would like to see the world's latest foul call. Was what I wanted to see in that moment. But yeah, it'd be tough because...
And this just came over Twitter, guys.
Right? It'd be tough to overrule the guy who was standing right there.
Before Tim Hardaway Jr. gets on a plane to head to New York, he's going to take three free throw attempts at LCA with nobody in the stadium.
All right, let's get more into the draft because, look, the... trying to predict what Brad Holmes is going to do is very difficult. Kang's good at it, but they did something that nobody expected. They did a couple of things nobody expected. We'll get to that at 11:35 here on 97.1 The Ticket. All right, so we'll get back to your open line calls in a minute. We promise we get into some draft stuff. Look, they helped themselves on the interior of the offensive and defensive lines, and quite frankly, those are the types of picks that give no juice to a town. They are the least sexy picks of all time, but that doesn't mean they're not good picks, and I think everybody's excited about the offensive line youth that they brought in and the depth that they have now, and there's, you know, between Mahogany, Glasgow and the two kids they drafted, there is legitimate competition at guard, but you can sort of see the next offensive line coming together.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the foundation for which all offensive success is built upon. Defensively, don't think they didn't address the pass rush by taking a defensive tackle. When there's edge pressure and a quarterback has the opportunity to climb in the pocket because there's no pocket collapsing going on, this is something that, Tyleek Williams is known as a run stuffer. He should be able to help collapse the pocket a little bit. And, you know, at a time where that's a guy that I would normally say is not a probable starter. He might get himself into at least heavy snap rotation early in his career because of the injury to Lee McNeil. But I got to admit, the idea of them not taking an edge rusher in an edge heavy draft is pretty amazing. It was a deep draft of edge rushers. And when the Lions were on the clock in the first round, as Araka was there, Mike Green was there, Scorton was there, JT was on the board, and they picked the defensive tackle, which, again, you know, I buy into. That was also a position of need, but I think they took the most talented player at a position of need. In the second round, Mike Green was still there. In the third round, Landon Jackson was there. Princely Emmanuel was there. Josiah Stewart was there.
Jordan Birch was there.
And they didn't take a edge rusher an off season where the focus of the fans and media, and we have been included in that group, is who's going to play opposite of Aiden Hutchinson. They haven't definitively answered that question. And you could make the case that they've gotten worse by losing Za'Darius Smith. They are bringing back Marcus Davenport. And I think that leads to a collective eye roll from Detroit because he's always hurt. And, you know, having faith in him feels like a risky proposition. They did add a sixth rounder who's a talented kid who put up some big numbers at Boise State. And what I actually like about him is something I've always done with small college guys, and sometimes it's indicative of them having breakthrough success, is in some of their biggest games against their biggest opponents, he made plays. And if you look at the Oregon game, he had a sack and five tackles in the Oregon game. He had two sacks against Washington State. And then the college football playoff against Penn State, he had a sack and two more TFLs, six tackles total. Those are good numbers against the power. I mean, I guess Oregon State or Washington State's no longer a Power 5 team, but they are a bigger program. This wasn't against Utah State and UNLV. And so there is some reason to think that, you know, this guy might be a diamond in the rough, but I don't know that he answers the bell as to what they're going to do at the edge opposite of Aiden Hutchinson. Is it flawed thinking for them to do what they have done? I don't know that this is a lead story as it pertains to the Lions 2025 season. Is some sort of malpractice not addressing the edge rusher opposite of Aiden Hutchinson? It's curious, but I don't know that people are going to say, well, they were a Super Bowl contender before, but they're not now. Because last year they went 15-2 with a worse group of edge rushers than they'll start this coming season with Aiden Hutchinson in the fold. And, you know, they were trending to be a top 10 team in sacks with Aiden Hutchinson. And now they lost him and they still went 15-2.
Well, there are things I didn't like about the draft. And one of them is, look, I like the receiver to slot just fine.
Mm-hmm.
I question where they drafted him with the resources they gave up to move up that high.
Understandable.
I don't think, because by all accounts, this guy was rated way lower on board. But what matters is what's on their board.
Yep.
I totally get that. And he's got great size, decent speed, and is, Brad Holmes kept saying, when you watch him, he didn't get targeted much, but when he was targeted, he made plays. And okay, I can get on board with that. But again, moving up that high to get him, that's, and Kang called it, that was the reach. And it really was a reach because you had guys like Landon Jackson or Princely Emmanuelan or Jordan Burch at the edge position that you could have taken, that they passed on. I do like the edge rusher they got from Boise State, Hassanin. When you look at what he has done in a short amount of time of playing football, he picked up football when he was 15. Came over from Egypt. It's a great story with him. But the last couple of years at Boise State,
straight out of Egypt,
he had like 99 pressures or something like that. It's crazy how effective he was in that program with, I think, over 20 sacks in those 2 years combined. I think he had 12 and a half 1 year and nine, I think, this year, nine and a half this year, whatever it was. But and he had like 33 tackles for loss over the last 2 years. This guy's a productive player, and he's heavier, I think, than you would expect him to be in the 260 range for only being 6'2". But he gets after it. He's got the high motor, and you watch his highlights, and it's a collision when he hits you. So I'm excited about that pick. It's a six rounder. Maybe I shouldn't get too excited, but I do like what's there. My big question is why was there so much maneuvering that they did to get the players that they got?
They maneuvered a lot. They only have so many roster spots, and it feels like they walked away with a lot of players anyway. And
right,
the thing about the draft picks is they are cheaper alternatives to veterans you have to sign if you run into cap issues, which they very well may. It will take some cap gymnastics to hang on to their star players as is, and they may be able to pull some of it off, but they also are prepared to kind of let some guys go if they need to and go with cheaper alternatives.
Well, I get the funny...
It's a good problem to have.
I guess, yeah. I have a funny feeling that they're going to end up with Za'Darius Smith again.
Everybody's saying it.
He's going to come back, and they're going to find a way, because it's not that difficult to find a way to fit him on this team in the cap. Under the cap. I think that's what's going to happen. When they didn't address edge rusher, one of those first few picks, I think they know what they're going to do. They're going to get the veteran, the guy who was here last year, knows what it's about, the guy who could probably really flourish with a healthy Hutchinson on the other side, never got a chance to see that because, that's really the reason why they went and got him, because they lost Hutch. So if they can bring him back, which I think they can, then all will kind of be forgiven with what's happened here, and you just get on the business of developing these players. But like you said earlier, with the guards, it's clear that they're building this offensive line of the future. They've got the good offensive line right now with some competition at the guard spot. But when guys are ready to move on, they think that they've drafted some guys. Now this offers up the opportunity for Giovanni Manu to just focus on being a tackle and not work at guard like he did last year.
The Za'Darius Smith thing, it feels, this is going to sound weird, but it feels almost too obvious for it to be a Brad Holmes move. Like, too many people think that's going to happen, which leads me to believe there's no way in hell it's going to happen.
Well, nobody else has signed him.
And that's what we can hope for.
Doug, don't try to crack Brad. That's my job.
Okay, fair enough. Do you think they're bringing back Za'Darius Smith?
I don't think it's a definite, like a lot of fans do.
Yeah.
This is what I think. They literally told us that they couldn't keep him because of money, so they cut him, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the best I'm thinking the Lions can offer Za'Darius Smith is a one-year incentive-laden deal. That's the best they can do. So Za'Darius sees this, and he's like, okay, I'm going to shop myself around. And he could wait through training camp and preseason, see if an injury happens, and get a better deal. I think at this point, Za'Darius is waiting for a better deal, which I think he can get. And I want Za'Darius back, but I don't think it's not like, oh, he's definitely coming back. Because I think he needs to get a fair deal for him.
Yep. I completely agree. And we'll see. You know, there's always that question that people say, well, do you want to win a Super Bowl? Because if Za'Darius Smith is opposite of Aiden Hutchinson, but he's also at a point in his career where he probably doesn't have too many more contracts coming, so he's probably thinking, all right, this last contract, I'd like it to be as big as possible because it is a business. It is the end of his, you know, we all think of professional contracts as like money cannon, so it might be his last money cannon deal. I don't know what he does, you know, if he has a business venture outside of this, but you know, so you can understand why a 32-year-old defensive lineman, whatever he is, says, I got to try and milk this last contract. 248-539-9797. We'll get to your phone calls and feedback on a variety of topics next here on 97.1, The Ticket. Hey, don't miss your chance to bet on all the clutch shots and legendary performances with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. FanDuel is the best place to find all your favorite player props. And now you can make heads-up player props with performance trends, and that means you can check on, if you want to bet on a player to score 30, you can check on what they're doing during the game and get in on the action with who's hot, who's not, without leaving the app. Plus, after the game tips off, you can combine live bets and the same-game parlays for a chance at a bigger win. I'm not a big same-game parlay guy, but here's what I would be if I hadn't joined FanDuel yet. I'd be all about the deal to bet $5, win that first bet, and get $250 in bonus bets. Visit FanDuel.com/Doug to join today. FanDuel is the official sports betting partner of the NBA. So what do you do there? You join, you find a prop bet, something like Cade over 10 points, and you bet it with your $5. You'll probably win. No guarantees, of course. Then you get the $250 in bonus bets. Must be 21 or over and present in Michigan. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. I'm just going to go ahead and call it a record-setting performance. We'll get to that today at 12:05. 248-539-9797. In the meantime, what we have here in Detroit is an irate Piston fan base over the end of that game and that call. And for people who buy into, well, they shouldn't have let it come down to that, that's also a topic. I mean, I look at these as completely separate topics. I don't think the only reason they lost the game is because of the call. Do I think they got robbed? Yes. Yes, I do. Do I want them to do things better so they're not in that situation? Also, yes. Yes, I do. Talking about the draft as well, it is amazing. I mean, I'm just going to call it a swing and a miss by me. For weeks, I thought, okay, it's a great draft to need edge rushers. And I still think it was a great draft to need edge rushers. They didn't really tap into it till late. There were 20, I think it was 24. He was the 25th edge rusher selected. Now, on their board, I'm sure they had him higher than that. But.
Well, obviously they did. But the watching Mike Green slip.
Yeah.
You know, that was something. And we discussed it on all last week, really, that he may not even have been on the Lions draft board based on off-field allegations. And if that was the case, then you can understand why he slipped the way that he did, because that was a guy many thought was top 15 talent that didn't go till way later in the draft.
248-539-9797. Mondays also mean Champ and Chump. Get yours in. We'll remind people of ours next hour. Robert is next here on 97.1 The Ticket. Hello, Robert.
Hello. My big thing with the draft is I think Brad Holmes acted like he was drafting scared. He wanted his guys, but he wanted them so bad that he did anything to get them, and he cost us 2 third-round picks next season. If he would have, in the first round, gone back 2 or 3 spots, and then, you know, and gained a little draft capital so he could then get the D-tackle he got, which I don't have a problem with. I just have a problem the way he drafted.
Well, there's two things. I think that if you are being critical of him trading up and giving up future picks, and I can understand why you do that. If you're being critical because he didn't make a trade that we don't even know was on the table, I don't know that I could agree. I wouldn't go there. We don't know.
It was just reported.
And
that's all.
Well, we don't know how far back it was for sure. You're right. There was a report that he had an offer that was tempting, but we also don't know that he could have got the defensive tackle he got. He decided that it wasn't worth it to risk losing him because, and that's the big part of this is we all assume that the Lions were the only team that had Tyleek Williams that high because most of the draft gurus were the only team. So they could have moved back. They could have stayed in the first round potentially, but would Tyleek Williams have been there? Brad didn't seem to think so. He didn't seem to think so. And so, cause there'd be no downside to making that trade.
Okay. Well, and the last thing, and when we moved up to 70, I was really excited thinking, well, he was going to get that edge. But let's say they weren't going to get an edge because they had this guy, you know, from Boise State in mind. They still had Jared Wilson there. And I thought, man, what a way to solidify your offensive line of the future.
Well, I would say that one of my takeaways from this draft certainly is not that they didn't solidify their offensive line of the future. In fact, I think it's probably one of the number one things they accomplished.
Yeah, the two guards they got are pretty good guards. I mean, Ratledge is, if you look at the athletics rankings, he was the third-rated guard, and Miles Frazier was the fifth-rated guard. Ratledge is really good, and I think they think there's some versatility with these players as well to move around in the interior if they have to. But I don't mind that pick at all, actually.
No.
And to get Frazier in the fifth round, when he had like a third round grade, that's pretty good value there. But as far as the giving up all the draft capital to move around the draft, I think what's clear is that the Lions are in a different position now than what they were 4 years ago. 4 years ago, you're probably looking for as much draft capital as you can. You're going to turn over the roster. You're going to try to find gems all over the place. Now you're an established team. You've built up the depth where the floor of this team is pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to compete for a spot on this team, it's not an easy thing to do. So what they're going to do is look at quality over quantity, and picks be damned at this point. They're just going to move around and get the guys that they identify. We really like this guy. Well, we don't pick for another 30 picks. Well, it doesn't matter. Let's just go get him.
Now, if the one thing the caller said, if he simply likes Jared Wilson, who's the center from Georgia, better than Miles Frazier or Tate Ratledge, then that's fine. I mean, I would understand your frustration with that. But I will say I am not that concerned about the future of the offensive line at this point.
No, I'm not. I'm not either. But they definitely passed on a lot of players that can rush the passer.
248-539-9797. Phil is in Southgate. And next, hello, Phil.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
What's up? Oh, sorry. My bad.
Oh, man.
That's totally
not much. Just I'm kind of in agreement for, I guess, both you guys, more so kind of how Gator seems to be with the whole pass rushing, kind of not lack of, but the moves that we made kind of seemed like at the time that maybe that we were making those moves to get some of those names that were kind of seemed to be falling in the second and the third rounds to trade up for a receiver. I just feel like that guy, you know, could have or may have been available later in the draft. And with the way the running kind of quarterback and, like, especially in our division and teams that we potentially meet in the playoffs, you got to get after those quarterbacks before they can make those plays. And I don't know. I like some of the guys we got, you know, first, second, and then at the end of the draft. But in, like, the middling picks, it's I guess it's wait-and-see approach, but just kind of how I feel, I guess.
No, I get it. If they don't really have any other answers at edge rusher, and they go into next season with this crew, is it complete malpractice? I don't think it's complete malpractice. They have one of the best guys in the league at the position. Last year without him, they were middle of the pack in terms of sacks. Now, QB pressures are a real thing, too. Tackles for loss are a real thing. Run support are a real thing. Effectiveness of an edge rusher and pass defense isn't measured solely upon sacks. Are they going to be better in the secondary than they were? I think they are going to be better in the secondary than they were. That helps the pass defense. It feels like there's a ton riding on the faith of Marcus Davenport staying healthy. Feels like there's a lot riding on that, because if he does stay healthy and can, you know, recapture some of his better form in this league, but that feels like a risky proposition.
I think they're counting on several things. I think they're counting on Levi Onwuzurike being more of a pass rusher. I think they're counting on Josh Pascal and developing a little bit more than what we've seen out of him. And as I mentioned before, I really think they're going to end up signing Za'Darius Smith.
Yeah, I hope so.
Because you can't possibly rely on a Marcus Davenport. You can enjoy him while he's healthy, but he's just not going to be healthy.
I mean, his best season, he had 9 sacks in only 11 games.
I mean,
but
he's got the size, the strength, the speed. He's got all of it. He just can't stay healthy.
9 sacks, Gator, in only 11 games. Oh, it was only 11, you say? Because it was another season where he got hurt. Like, it's just, there's a lot riding on that over there. And then again, 15-2, and they're getting Hutch back. So, I don't know. I'm shocked they didn't do more. I'm shocked they didn't do more. I shouldn't be. 248-539-9797. Feedback to the Carson Anderson inbox. Champ Kang, Chump, Doug, and Gator. Nothing that happened before the last play of the game matters because the Pistons fought back. Refs cost them the win. Nothing more. Why does that make us the chump?
Because he thinks we're just ignoring what happened prior to that.
We opened
rather
the
than
show.
Understanding what we said, which is that all things can be true, and they're two separate topics. One, the way they played, which they took themselves out of really giving them that chance to win because they played so poorly, turning the ball over down the stretch and all that, which we've talked about. But also, that being said, that last play of the game, they're down by a point.
Yeah.
Tim Hardaway Jr. launches a 3. He gets fouled. They don't call it. And he would have had 3 free throws to make 2 to give them the lead with tenths of a second left on the clock.
Whatever the point of emphasis is, I think it's fair to say that the Pistons, I would prefer they stop turning it over. I'd prefer that they make some shots in the last minute and a half, specifically Cade, who had 2 shots and also had a turnover. And I'd also prefer that the refs call the game. 248-539-9797. I call it record setting. We'll get to that at 12:05 here on 97.1 The Ticket.